Hello and welcome to the Headstuff Podcast. This is episode 15 with Bea Dolan and Buddy Peace. I'm also here with Paddy O'Leary.
How are you doing?
And Conor Wilkins.
Hello, Alan.
How's things?
I'm good.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah, so we recorded the Bea Dolan podcast the other day and it was fun.
It was a good time.
It was a lot of fun.
If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, we have loads of other episodes, about 14. So you can go back and listen to all of those. Because this is the 15th, you see.
Yeah, so it's about 14.
Give or take 14 episodes.
Exactly 14.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. So you can go back and listen to our back catalogue on iTunes or SoundCloud, and you can subscribe, and then you'll get all the new episodes straight onto your little lovely phone.
That's nice.
Yeah. So go and do that. Bea Dolan is definitely one of the coolest people I've met and talked to for a long time.
He is definitely the coolest person, I think.
Well, not for you. You've met me. But for me...
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
I was very intimidated. I met Al as well.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, yeah. But well, me and Paddy are in a different different situation than you then.
But, like, what a guy. So generous. He spent so much time with us that we have to split this into two episodes.
Yeah. It's the first two-parter.
This is part one of the Bea Dolan and Buddy Peace episode. We didn't know Buddy Peace was going to be there, but I'm delighted he was there.
Yeah,
he was very good.
That was the best surprise that could have happened. Well, maybe not that could have happened. But
yeah, it was a good surprise though.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not the absolute best. Like, I don't think Buddy would be offended if we were like, you know, say if Kanye was there. We talked about Kanye for, how long did we talk about Kanye for?
Yeah.
He wasn't even in
Do
the room.
Do you like talking about Kanye? I don't know if you like Kanye or not.
We should rename this the Kanye podcast or Kanye Appreciation Club. Yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
No, but Buddy Peace, it was great. He was a great guy, and it was great talking to both of them. So, what did we talk about? What did we talk about on the first of these two episodes?
So, in part one, we kind of...
Paddy's reading from a list.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I had to make a list. But we recorded in B. Dolan's hotel room.
Oh, yeah, that was
Well,
fun.
Actually, it was Buddy Peace's hotel room.
It was, actually.
Yeah, I don't think B wanted us to mess up his room.
Yeah.
We knocked on his door and there was no answer. We were like,
yeah.
What's happening here?
We talked about staying in travel lodges.
Yes, we talked about travel lodges.
We did go in and move all the furniture around, so I don't blame him.
We kind of messed the place up a bit.
Yeah, I don't think Buddy was too happy with that because I had seen on their Facebook
page. He was cool enough with it. Oh, really?
They actually do. No, a few days earlier, he actually does like some feng shui or however you want to say it. And he does a picture of him like moving the chairs around. And stuff, and then we rock in with all this equipment and start moving desks and tables and chairs,
pulling the place apart.
Yeah, he seemed pretty cool with it.
Yeah, no, he was a cool guy. We talked about the picture on the wall.
Yeah, the picture that's on every single travel lodge wall.
Yeah,
bit of touring. Kanye.
We talked about Kanye,
obviously. Buddy Peace has now christened the Kanye Corner.
Kanye Corner. Yep.
So I think that's going to be used again.
And just a Kanye Corner in every podcast.
Mm-hmm. In most podcasts, we do talk about him.
Yeah.
There's just so much to say.
Still talking about him. Like, you know, is there going to be a Kanye Corner in the intro to this podcast?
You know, he's actually confirmed that he's running for president.
Is he?
He said, no, I wasn't joking.
Is he really?
Yeah, he said he was serious.
Is he going to be on the podcast?
Yeah, hopefully.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
So, Bea Dolan and Buddy Peace.
Yes, the lads.
The lads.
We went to see them in concert the night after in the Workman's Club.
Mm-hmm.
It was unreal.
Unbelievable.
Conor didn't make it.
Yeah. Had to work. Lousy work.
This was my third time to see Bea Dolan live.
Where did you see him the second time? We both saw him for the first time in Limerick in 2010.
Yeah, and then I saw him in Roisin Dubh in Galway.
Oh, okay.
That was last year.
Okay.
Just before House of Bees Volume 3 dropped.
Okay.
That's
the lingo, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting because the first time we saw him, he just had like a
psalm.
You really have been hanging out with Bea Dolan too long.
That's just Kildare, man.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Go on.
The first time that I had seen him,
good.
That's probably bad grammar as well. You can just edit this out.
No, that's right.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, very good. Go
Super.
On, continue.
He just had like a CDJ or like a laptop when we saw him in Limerick.
Yeah.
The second time I saw him, he had the full band.
Oh, yeah.
And now the third time, it was just himself and Buddy.
So, which was the better time?
The gig with just Buddy was great. But with live band was something different as well. So it's kind of tough to pick the two. But
it's maybe hard to compare, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough to compare. But like Buddy was there as part of the live band.
But the song,
oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually. I don't think he said that.
But then when he played last year, Kill the Wolf wasn't out yet. Did he play a lot of the same songs? Or?
Yeah, well, he played a few of the songs. Like, you know, Kill the Wolf is... Five years in the making. So like the songs were there, obviously. But it was a lot of mixtape stuff.
Oh, okay. House of Bees stuff.
House of Bees.
Okay. Well, the gig in the Workhams was unreal. He had he had people pumped up, and he's just such an intense performer. He's so brilliant.
Like. Yeah.
And he can say a lot of words very fast.
He can. Yeah. He can. It's a skill.
Yeah.
The worst part about that gig was...
That I wasn't there.
That Connor wasn't there.
And the second worst thing?
Was that Buddy Peace's bass was just destroying everything.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So the tables that were on the side that people had their drinks on were just shaking constantly.
Oh, deadly.
I lost a pint. I lost a pint.
Did you actually lose a pint?
Yeah, a pint.
It was worth it, to be honest.
It was a pint, a candle, and a pint of water fell, like just bounced off the table and smashed on the ground. So that's a good thing.
Yeah,
you were all complaining about your ears afterwards. I was fine, but
I was fine after like you know half an hour or whatever.
Yeah,
getting old, it was good. Buddy, loud,
it was brilliant.
Like Mary was still giving out about it the next day. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Well, they know how to turn up the volume.
They do.
Yeah. You want a little bit of that though? You know,
you do. Yeah, yeah. No, it was class.
You want to come out of there feeling like you're at a big gig. Like.
Yeah. It was class. And there's all sorts of things. There's a dance off.
Yeah,
I'm really raging that I missed this now.
Yeah,
and when it was going on, I was thinking, oh God.
Yeah. Next time you'll have to just make sure you have the day off work.
Yep.
So anyway, maybe we should just get into this first episode. This is part one. We're going to release part two in about 2 or 3 days. So watch out for that. If you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, it'll just automatically pop into your phone like a U2 album,
but not as sneaky.
There's something pretty cool in part two as well.
There is. B. Dolan does a freestyle and it's amazing. So you definitely want to come back and hear that. In the meantime, here's part one. So here we are on the Heads of Podcast with B. Dolan.
And
Buddy Peace.
Yes.
Yeah. Not quite as animated.
I'm pumped.
I'm also here with Paddy O'Leary.
How are you doing?
And Connor Wiggins.
Hello.
Hello. We're gonna talk all about the new album and various other things, the tour and whatever else comes up.
Cool.
I wanted to start off with the song "These Rooms" that's on the latest album. Because we're in your hotel room.
It's pretty appropriate. Yeah.
Is it inspired by this kind of place? Was it written in this kind of place?
It absolutely is, yeah. We're in a Travelodge in Dublin. The crazy thing, we've been in Travelodges for most of this tour. And that picture you see over the headboard has been over the headboard in every single Travelodge in anywhere in England. Yeah. And here.
But what is it, though? Because I'm seeing, like, it looks part, like, middle of a fried egg, and then it's, like, a sort of out-of-focus sun.
Yeah, it's all out of focus.
Or maybe it's a river or something.
It's like a weird face as well.
I sort of felt like it was a cherry at one time.
Yeah. I think it's like a Rorschach test.
Like a cherry in water.
It looks like if you had woken up after sleeping in a green all night and there's dew in your eyes and you're seeing the sun for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also... It subtly incorporates Travelodge's corporate colors, though. I did notice that about it. It's red and blue. Yeah.
I noticed that on your I've been keeping up with your Facebook statuses for the tour.
Yeah.
And I did notice you were talking about these pictures.
Yep.
And I just kind of thought maybe it was a joke. But
here we are. I posted that picture 5 days ago, and here we are in another room that looks exactly like the one I posted a picture of.
Wow.
Incredibly. Yeah. These rooms don't change.
Okay.
It's not a game out here.
And and that's
we just made a game out here.
And that kind of, I suppose, sums up the song in a way. Is it also kind of a metaphor for the life on the road and the
Yeah, for sure. I liked hotel rooms when I was a little kid. I still kind of like them. It's cool. It's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But I do remember a certain time when I was thinking about life on the road and being like, am I going to live in hotel rooms? That was something I was like, when I looked ahead at a career on the road, it was, and I pictured that for myself. It was, I had a trepidation. I was, seemed like a lonely idea.
Right.
But it's not so bad.
You've got your buddy with you, so it's all good.
Yeah, buddy pieces. Right. How
bad can it be? We'll walk you through it.
And so, like, touring, the life of touring, you tour a lot. You tour extensively.
Yeah.
It's part of your makeup, I suppose, as a rapper.
Yeah.
Is that something that you foresee yourself doing on an ongoing basis?
Yeah.
Is it a part of the job that you really enjoy? Or?
Yeah, for as long as I'm able, yeah. For as long as I'm physically able to do it, I think I will be doing this. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's a weird thing. It's the whole emotional roller coaster a lot of times, which I've gotten really good at riding, but it's always still an emotional roller coaster. The week before you leave is always this kind of. You start thinking about death a lot. Does this happen for you? Like, yeah. Do you start like looking at everything? Like, well, this might be the last time I see this park. I don't know. Man, like, that might just be me.
Like, what if you don't return?
Yeah.
I get it more like when I'm on the tour. I think I have the death thoughts.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the sort of like, oh god, and then yeah, like I might not return from it. Like,
right.
Yeah, that's when they happen. But well, yeah, okay, that's death thoughts.
I have, because I've heard it. Sage has a lyric where he says, like, every time I go, it's like he's talking about it, saying goodbye to his girl.
Oh, yeah.
It's like she's watching her man go to war.
Watching her man go to die.
Or go to die, right.
Yeah.
And that's, it really is kind of what it is. Like, there is a slight, and we don't get too dramatic about it, me and my wife anymore, but, like, there is a tiny bit of, like, I really love you. This is a lot of like, I hope we meet again.
And so how long have you left for this time?
Man, I don't know. I don't know how long I've been here. I don't know when I'm going home. I actually brought my wife out here this time. We spent a week on vacation in London and Paris, and then she went home. September 13th was my first show. And I go home on October 26th.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
And then I'm home for only like 3 or 4 days, and then I go off to do some more U.S. shows.
Right.
And the touring stops for the winter sometime around November 20th,
right.
Most likely.
And touring in the U.S., is that, coming from Ireland and being in Ireland, you could tour Ireland and go home every night. Do you know?
Yeah, right.
But in the U.S., it's almost as far as going to Ireland. Some parts, if you're going from New York you know, San Diego,
yeah,
it's nearly further, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, a full North American tour is usually 2 months when we do it like that. Yeah.
Right. And where's home now? You're not in New York anymore.
Providence, Rhode Island, which is in between Boston and New York.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like settled there because you've obviously talked about leaving New York, and
I have a house there. Yeah. I met my wife in 2002. She lived in this town outside of Providence where I now live.
Okay.
And we bought a house out there.
Cool.
Yeah. She's close to her family when I'm away.
Yeah.
It's a good look. And when I'm home, I'm just in the woods. Like, right. When I'm on tour, I get to experience cities and hang out and eat good food. And then I go home and I'm in the woods.
Yeah. You get to experience rat mines.
Yeah. This place is all right.
Do you have a log fire?
I don't, not in the house. I have a fire pit outside,
mm.
And we have a coal stove in the basement, but we're too scared to use it.
But do you chop wood?
I don't chop wood, no.
Okay.
You look as if you could chop wood.
I wish
wood.
I could. Yeah, I wish.
Can you see yourself getting into it later?
It's a thing, like, we have a stove in the basement, and we've considered it. We have, like, I think it's a coal thing, but...
We have
tried to figure that out, because the winters are brutal where it's, like, really, really crazy.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
And, we have, like, gone back and forth about... We pay, like, a crazy amount for oil, so, like...
You should get on it, man.
Yeah, we do consider that.
And the basement stove, it heats the house, is it? Is it?
Yeah, like, yeah, because it's a small house. Right. So, like, yeah, there's a stove in the basement, and there's, like, radiators or, like, holes in the floor that... The heat transfers or something, but it's strange. We had a wood stove when I was little, and my sister has asthma, I think, because of it.
Oh,
like, you know, all that shit is in the air.
Comes out. And,
yeah, so there's like pros and cons, but we've researched that extensively. We're still
This, are we still developing. in the home keeping section of the podcast now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you change your bed sheets? It's we just don't know how often we should do it.
I've got some thoughts on this.
Once a month.
Once a month, okay. Yeah,
whether they need it or not.
Yeah.
So you moved back out to the Providence area from New York.
Yeah.
So you moved to New York in...
99? Yeah.
And so what was the reason kind of for heading out there? Just that's where the rap scene was?
Yeah, all my favorite rappers lived in New York. So I thought I'd go there and meet them.
Yeah. did you meet them?
I saw Big Pun once.
I saw Big Pun once.
Yeah. He was leaning on a car. He was like sitting on the hood of a car, like talking to a bunch of people, and the back wheels of the car were off the ground. Yeah, Big Pun was a big cat. Yeah. I lived in the Bronx when I was there, and Pun, I forget what I think it's called Jimmy's Saloon was the place they were always at. Yeah, I don't know. Mos Def was at a protest I went to once. My man freestyled with Guru once after some rap show. He was just like hanging around on the corner, and he was in a cypher with Guru.
Shit.
Nice.
Yeah.
High stakes.
And so when you were there, you were doing the Def Jam poetry stuff?
Yeah, I started performing at the New Eurekan. And yeah, Def Jam was taping their pilots for the Def Poetry Jam. But mostly when I encountered that, it was like this private industry party where I performed for Russell Simmons and a bunch of industry big wigs and A&Rs and managers and bullshit. And I was pretty like repulsed by it. I was like, this isn't going to work for me.
What was it about it?
They were pretty and they were fashionable and they were skinny and they were on cocaine in many cases and they were just shady as fuck. And I couldn't understand. Like, no one would just give you a straight answer.
It was very like, so
what's going to be happening with this tape? Like, are you going to be using it? Are you going to be selling this? Well, you know, we're just going to be, you know, we got to put it together and we're going to create a little reel and then give it to a manager. And then, like, it was just all this shit. And I was like 18.
Yeah.
So it was just, I couldn't make any sense of anything. Yeah. And I was like, I hate this. All I knew was I hated it. Yeah, and I was I have to get the fuck out of here. This isn't
feeling that strong.
Yeah. Do you still have the same kind of illusions about the music industry?
Yeah, but I'm more secure now when I encounter those people. So I can be a dickhead too.
Yeah.
And I have more of a knowledge base of what I'm talking about and dealing with. And I've learned the angles that people are coming from and what they want and what they can offer.
And knowing what you want yourself is really important.
Yeah, exactly. And what I wanted at that time more than anything was just to make shit.
Yeah.
I knew that I had years of experimentation ahead of me. Which I did. It took me from that time maybe 8 years to release my first album.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I instinctively just knew it was the wrong place in the wrong time.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of brings me back around to another question about these rooms. You've a lyric in there, which is you're going the cousin of death, which you're going to sleep, which I assume is a Nas reference.
Yes.
Is
it? Yeah. Yeah.
So basically about that, I wanted to ask you more about mainstream rap nowadays. And how do you feel about it? Do you listen to it?
I love it.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I always have.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a fan of rap music.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why it happens, but nearly...
It works out well with me being a rapper and being a fan of rap music.
Yeah. I suppose because, you know, sometimes when it's like kind of underground versus like mainstream in a way, it's like there's, you can see something in it that maybe other people don't, and that's why you might dislike it. I heard you talking on the podcast with Scroobius Pip about Eminem and how he's still using words that he used like in the 90s and it's kind of not cool. Like,
yeah.
And I just was wondering like if, is there more of that? Is it more of that kind of stuff that annoys you? Or are you still a fan?
I'd say there's as much that annoys me in the quote-unquote underground scene as there is that annoys me in the mainstream scene. Maybe more in the underground scene.
Right.
Because the underground scene, I can be more hypercritical of because I'm intimately familiar with what people are doing. You know, like sometimes with the mainstream stuff, like there's processes and there's levels of genius and ability that I'm not even privy to. Like I whatever, you know, whatever it took to create Beyonce's last album, like I can't do that. I don't know how to do that.
It's like a feature film or some of it, like the yeah. production levels and like all the sort of the processes involved. There's like the in the Jay-Z album or something like that. It's like it's yeah. huge. It's like an absolutely massive production, and that's it's kind of amazing that those things,
yeah,
like all the processes lock into place, and then I don't know, the result is like fucking good. Like, yeah, it's really good.
And then you know, you have underground shit where it's just like you're masking a lack of ability with this like moniker of integrity and yeah, shit. Yeah. Like, oh, we didn't sell out. Well, motherfucker, you didn't sell out because you can't sell yeah. out. Like, no one wants to buy your shit. That's why you didn't sell out.
Yeah. For some reason, Kanye West comes up on all our podcasts.
Yeah, for some reason, Kanye West comes up in every fucking interview I do.
Because
I've become the spokesperson for Kanye West. I get asked about Kanye so much. It's right. crazy.
Oh, that's a shame because I hadn't heard.
I'm a fucking about authority on Kanye West.
They fucked the car we travel in because yeah. he gets played a lot in the car.
Motherfuckers should like. I should write his Wikipedia page. The amount of like, he should give me money. I'm basically yeah, his fucking PR absolutely. Spokesman to the underground.
Yeah, he's royalties.
So I'm guessing you're going to vote for Kanye 2020.
Sure, yeah. Fuck it. Why not?
So you're a fan.
I'm a fan. Yeah, yeah. Fuck with Kanye.
And as
on
a,
every
as
level, his music, his public persona, I love it all.
And as a DJ producer, are you a fan of his work? And that's
yeah, no, I really am. Like, yeah.
This is important stuff. Like,
like, I don't know. At first, I was kind of like, I mean, maybe in my earlier DJ days when he was first coming out. I mean, stuff like Goldig and things like that. I sort of grudgingly play it. Like, if I was DJing at plays, it's like people come and say, "You got Gold Digger," and then
yeah, you fine. Got no Yeezy Serato.
But then, yeah, like actually, it was hearing it in B, like that B made all these playlists when we were touring with Dan Lesak, and then he played, was it Dark Twisted?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, no, that one. Yeah. And then from then on, it's like it, like there'd be a lyric or two that would come up, and then B would just start cracking up, and that's, I don't know, it just made me really appreciate him. And then I think he sort of broke it down for me in a way where it's sort of like, you know, he's kind of like he's like an asshole, but he's really smart, and like I don't know, I really admire him. I think he's brilliant. He's sort yeah. of, I think he's really necessary in hip hop because like. A lot of people see him as like fucking up all the time, but I don't think he is at all. I think he's like completely like he's really clever and
oh, I think he knows
very
exactly
calculated. Yeah. And yeah, like, yeah, yeah, he's not stupid. Yeah, people yeah. like to paint him as stupid, but he's absolutely not. He's cleverer than so many people.
Yeah,
like, involved
he's,
in
he's not here by accident. He's yeah. not in the position yeah, he's yeah, in right yeah. now by accident. Like so,
and he's like skillful enough still to move the art forward.
Yeah.
Mm. Which is like that's what impresses me about him at this point is that like I compare him to Jay-Z. And I think that Jay-Z, you know, they both reached this level of pop stardom at a certain point. They've both become more than hip hop or more than rap. Like your mom knows who they are and your yeah. grandmother knows yeah. who they yeah. are and shit. And, you know, Jay-Z has very shrewdly manipulated that to be a business person, a very successful business person. He's killing it with Tidal and all that, or whether or not he's killing it, but that's where his focus is. And I really feel like, at that level, Kanye's focus is still creativity
yeah.
and innovation. And like his next album is not going to sound like the previous album.
Yeah, he's brave.
And well. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Jay has that line, I'm not a businessman, I'm a business
yeah,
man.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, like Jay's last album, I don't really care about it. Like he was sort of chasing the trap sound and he was following what and trying to squeeze himself into what rap was doing. Kanye doesn't do that. Kanye yeah. is like, I've been working on this weird fucking shit for 3 years. And then every producer in rap has to go like, oh, that's the hot shit now, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying to B as well, like in his last album, there's so many parts of it. It's just like, he doesn't ever do what I'm expecting it to. Like, he would just sort of, I don't know, just drop in some random sample and then come back into the track and then there'd be loads of strange edits and like it's really interesting and experimental and like yeah. way more than I think people realize. Like
yeah.
I think it's really interesting stuff.
I can't think of another pop artist at that level of fame that has made an album as crazy as Yeezus in a long time.
No.
Like maybe David Bowie with that like Low album, you know, when he just made that weird ass.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like who the hell else? But David Bowie, like, I don't think was even like at the top of his shit. Like he was kind of that that came out
like Radiohead.
He made that like drum and bass record and shit or
What I was that?
Yeah, David Bowie's got some like drum and bass joint.
I know he did the Trent Reznor stuff, which is quite fun.
But it's still not even comparable.
No, no.
Like Radiohead with Kid A a bit, maybe?
Maybe, maybe.
Yeah.
The size of it, like that Yeezus, like arguably is the biggest album that has been that, like, out there.
Yeah. You know? But OK was Computer was...
I know. OK Computer and then Kid A.
Yeah.
But, like, I suppose Kid A wasn't as, like... Kanye's the biggest thing going, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
We can call this section Kanye Corner.
and then yourself, how did you get into DJing, producing? Was it...
It's my brother, really. Like, he got me into, like, drum and bass and hip-hop and stuff. Like, it was hip-hop first.
So it was hip-hop first?
Yeah, that's literally when I was about 5 or 6, like, weird old, like... I think it was, like, Double D and Steinsky. There was one track in particular, and, like, me and him used to dance around to that. And then... The Show by Dougie Fresh, like, we both memorized it and back and forth did it.
I've never heard this.
Like,
keep going.
I had Lardy Dardy memorized when I was way too young, and like, I just sort of do it in school mainly to myself. But and then, yeah, just later on, I think it was when I was about 13, we got turntables and just started scratching and mixing and stuff like that, and spent a lot of time by myself.
Yeah, that's the unifying thread.
It requires a lot of time spent in solitude, but yeah. And then since then, just sort of, you know, getting into production various points, and then taking it from there, really. And then just sort of integrating the two. And like, from DJing, you get in here for, you know, because you spend so long listening to the music you're playing, so your ear just develops to sort of hear, oh, they use that thing, and that's how they chop that beat up. And then, yeah, from then on, you just sort of, it makes you want to make your own, and then, like, because it just feels like it's a fun thing to do. And then, and basically.
And do you feel like when you're listening to a new rap song for the first time, say when you listen to Yeezus for the first time or something like that, do you listen more to the beats and the music, or do you...
Yeah, but then the thing is with, like, Kanye's, like, his lyrics are so mental, like, it all just hits me at the same time, I think.
Maybe not with Kanye. I just used him because it's Kanye Corner, but,
but, you know. Well, Kanye Corner, this is that part of the show. Yeah,
right, but normally, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I think it sometimes, like, it's sort of, I think it's similar to B, like, we mainly listen to, like, drums and sort of, like, we get the loops first, but then... Yeah, the lyrics come later on. I mean, there's stuff like in B's stuff that there's lyrics I'm still picking apart now that it's like he'll be doing it on stage and I'm behind him sort of waving my arms around and, oh, that's what that is. And then well, he'll tell me what it's referencing now. But I didn't clock that at all.
Okay.
I've started to hear music like that. Producers would tell me for years that, like, I just hear... I would point out something I said, and I'm like, what do you think of that? Like, oh, I didn't even notice you said that. Like, or they would tell me, like, I just hear it as sound. And I only recently have come, because I was so lyric centric for so long, so focused, obviously, as a lyricist on the lyrics. But yeah, after producing this album, I'm starting to understand that. Like, I'm starting to hear certain songs and just like, I can disregard what's being said, even if nothing's being said. That's kind of what my enjoyment of A$AP Rocky is based on. He's never really saying anything incredible. Like, he's got lines here and there, but, like, for the most part, his voice just fits into the rhythm properly does cool shit. Like, and is an instrument to a certain degree.
And do you guys, like, try to keep on top of what's going on now in music? Or, do you just go out of your way to try find out new stuff?
Well, I have to live on the internet because it's about a third of what I do. I have to manage all my social media shit, Facebook and Twitter. So the fact that I'm there every day, I just sort of naturally end up with things in front of me. I follow the same magazines that cover us. And so then I end up seeing what they're promoting week to week. And so that keeps me pretty on top of what's coming out. Yeah. And I zero in on certain people that I dig. I'll see everybody saying somebody's name and check out a track, and either it grabs me or, you know, the same as anyone.
You're definitely more on top of, like, current hip-hop than I am. Like, I mean, I'm into stuff, but, like, you're into, like, things stuff. That I always, yeah, you're into stuff. But yeah, like, you know, people, like, you know, Vince Staples. Like, I've heard his name so much, but for some reason, I've just never bothered to check it out. And then now I love it because you've been playing it. Like,
there's a ton of shit. There's a ton of massive amount of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess just over time, like, I keep track of every name I hear and give it a listen at least.
Yeah.
And see if it grabs me.
Who are you really loving at the moment?
I've been listening to a lot of Vince Staples, like Bay said, a lot of Danny Brown, a lot of ASAP Rocky.
I've been calling him ASAP Rocky, so it shows what I know.
That's a correct way.
Yeah. $8 AP Rocky.
What the fuck else have I been listening to? I don't know. You've been in the car with me.
Yeah.
No, yeah, everything you said, I mean, that's, yeah, that's
there's
what
the band as well, there's two girls.
eBay.
Yeah.
No, it's non-hip-hop, but yeah, I've been playing the shit out of that record this year.
Because I saw you did the AMA on Reddit.
Oh, yeah.
For like 3.5 hours.
I started to get very OCD about it. I was like...
I've answered every question.
Yeah, I was like, all right.
How does that work? Like, what happens in the AMA?
You just like, say like, hey, I'm here.
And then you just get questions fired at you.
Yeah.
What was the weirdest question you got?
I don't even remember. I don't know.
I'm sure you got some weird stuff though.
Yeah. I have to go back and look at it. They weren't as weird as I wish they were.
Like, it's Reddit, you kind of expect like the lowest of the scum.
Yeah. One of my favorites ever was like a kid asking me about my pre-stage ritual. Like, what do you do before you go on stage?
Oh yeah.
Because it was just a weird answer that I've never told anyone. It was just like, I make sure my shoes are tied tightly. I make sure my fly is up. And I pull my pants up.
Yeah.
And I tuck my shirt in. It's like these are like... Oh, yeah.
No, but you would think that's obvious, but it's... Yeah,
it's, but it's like...
That's a good question. I'd like to know that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I stretch a little.
Do you?
Yeah. But I like to feel like my clothes are hugging me before I go out. I like to be sort of bundled up when I hit the stage.
Do you do any kind of vocal kind of warm-up or anything?
Yeah, I do. I do a vocal warm-up.
Yes, he does.
Can you give us your impression of his vocal warm-up?
And like...
That's the one. Yeah, roof of the mouth.
Yeah.
That's awesome. There's 3 or 4 in there.
I would need to blow out the microphone by doing that.
Yeah, called the Zen of Screaming is the name of it. It's a vocal warm-up for hardcore singers and punk singers. And, and it's not necessarily focused on hitting the note as much as just like loosening the muscles that correspond with yelling.
Okay.
So that you don't hurt your voice while you do that. Yeah.
And did you get onto this by yourself, or was it when you were...
POS from Doomtree put me onto it.
All right.
Yeah, and I, because when I first started performing, it's a thing, like, even in this tour, we've been doing a bunch of new material, and for the first 5 or 6 shows, when I'm not sure, I don't have the muscle memory of yet of where to breathe, and I breathe in kind of strange places, when you strain, you hurt your voice and you lose your voice quickly. And so, and when I first started performing at like big festivals and stuff, I would find that like the bigger the show, the quicker I would lose my voice.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? And you know, he put me onto that DVD, and that's when I kind of started to get some like science about it. Like, yeah, when any muscle is tight or tense, that's when you hurt it. And yeah, you're on stage in front of 8,000 people, and your body is tense as hell, and you're pushing, and you lose your voice. So, yeah, this vocal warm up, that was definitely a lifesaver. I use it now. I don't use it every night on tour. Like after a certain number of dates, my voice is kind of just stays warmed up, and it's fine. But especially for the beginning of a tour or like a very important show, or if my voice is a little fucked up to begin with, yeah, that gets me through.
Because there's a couple of runs during this tour where you're hitting date after date after of shows. Like, you didn't give yourselves a whole lot of time off.
No. Well, time off is lost money.
This is time off.
Yeah,
to make you talk anyway.
Right. Well, I mean, today was a day off, and what did we do? Like, you creative people with a whole day to yourselves.
Yeah.
You go wander in the city. You find a record store. You spend money. You get a good meal. You spend money. You know, like, so, yeah, it's just like an equation of a day off is lost wages on tour. Yeah. So we want as many shows as we can while we're out here.
I find it nearly impossible to have a day off. Being a creative person as well, is like I always have to do something, and if I'm not doing something, something's wrong.
Is it the same with you? I mean, we're fucking tired on tour.
it's just weird sleeping patterns and things.
Yeah,
like that.
And you're in a different bed every night. And
yeah.
Although maybe it's the same bed.
Every single travel is the exact same bed.
Yeah, after Dublin's going to be interesting. After we get off stage in Dublin, we need to drive to Belfast, which is about an hour and a half. So we'll get in around 2 a.m.
Great new motorway.
Then we got to get up at 5 a.m., drive another bit to the ferry, catch the ferry to Scotland, get to Scotland, drive 4.5 hours across Scotland.
Where are you playing in Scotland?
We're not playing Scotland. Right. We're driving to Newcastle.
Oh, right.
And when we get to Newcastle, we got to catch an overnight ferry to Amsterdam.
I think there's certain points in that I haven't heard yet.
Yeah. It's about to get really real.
This is Buddy finding out the itinerary for the first time. You
know? I might have to rethink my next week.
So you'll reach tired. Our driver on this one, he was earlier in the, like a couple weeks ago, he was like, I don't take naps. I've never been able to take naps. I was like, you're about to learn how to take naps. He passed out on a ferry like 2 days ago. He was drooling on himself.
No, I love driving. It's like, man. Wait.
So how many of you is there on the tour?
There's three of us on this one.
Yeah.
Me, Buddy, and Brian, who is our driver/sound technician.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Is it nice to have a kind of tight-knit group like that?
Yeah, it is. It's cool. Mm. Fit in a car.
Yeah.
Which has
yeah.
nice seats. Nicer than a van.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
How much equipment do you actually have to haul around? Might not be such an interesting question, but it's just...
It's pertinent. It's on topic. There's a big box, which is like the main sound module and stuff. And then it's... I don't know. It's just all the external stuff. Like, there's a Moog... Moog keyboard.
It's pronounced Moog.
And then I don't know, just various bits and pieces like merch boxes and all that stuff. So like, we're carrying everything that sets the show up, apart from like tables and stuff. So boxes and stuff. It fits in neatly, but it's just a bit of a blast to bring it in places. But last tour we had to bring in like drum kits.
Full band last tour, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you brought a full band of people. How many people were on that one?
That one, I don't know how many people.
Well, there was four of us on stage, but then
Pip was on that one as a driver.
Yeah, Pip drove, and then host. There was a. Yeah,
Natasha. He did one song, did he?
Yeah, well, he would do like spoken word, I think.
He introduced it and
he
host
DJ.
And host.
Yeah.
With a lizard mask on, he used to DJ.
Lizard mask on. Like he's fooling anybody under that thing.
Yeah, his beard poking out.
What could that be? Yeah.
But like, in the past, like, so you've done, you know, you have your CDJ. When you're going by yourself, or you had just yourself and Buddy, or you've done your live band, you've also had a marching band,
that happened.
What next?
I like this setup. I feel like we've kind of landed on something really pure and like and exciting with the me and Buddy setup. Honestly. In one sense, it's practically very reproducible, and you know, obviously bringing a marching band, that shit is not, that's some once in a lifetime shit.
We
promoted it, we're like, hey, this is a once in a lifetime tour, everybody, and people were like, everybody says everything's once in a lifetime. And now kids are like, yo, you brought a fucking marching band, when's that gonna happen again? Never, motherfucker, never again.
That's so true, logistically, that's not gonna happen again.
I said the other day, when I'm dead, parade my body through the street with the marching band if you want, and that'll be the next time it happens.
You should change your name to Be Dolan and Marching Band.
I'm saying, fuck that.
64 piece orchestra on the next tour, right?
Why not? Philharmonic.
But
it's travelable. It's something that, you know, I can consistently bring, even if, you know, like, we don't have the craziest guarantee. Obviously, like, I'm never going to have a guarantee to justify a marching band until I'm fucking Stevie Wonder. And then, you know, so it's a deliverable show, but it's also like, once we've started really, it was really an evolution of stuff. I got this sound card, the box Buddy's talking about, because we were using it with the band at first.
Right.
And it was something that would allow us to like play back stems while a live drummer played and a guitarist played over it.
Right.
But then I realized that we could also use it to do an MC DJ set, but make that DJ set sound sonically as big as a band, because the you know, having a sound card allows you, it's a little nerdy and, you know, but whatever, but it's got 8 outputs. So where, you know, if you see a DJ coming out of like just a mixer with two turntables, that doesn't have the sound dynamics and ease of mixing.
Right.
You know, the person at the board can't mix that like a live band. Yeah. But if you're coming out of 8 channels and all your drums are on one channels and all in this big analog synth that we travel with, the sub fatty is on one channel and the stems are on another, you can mix that and make it sound huge.
Right.
But we can retain the breaks, the samples, the shit that you actually want to hear. Because a live band with hip hop is also not always a selling point. Like, some of the drums are important in rap, so to play them all on the same drum kit doesn't always make sense. You know, when you hear Film the Police, you want to hear the James Brown break beat there. When you hear Earth Moves, you want to hear this 808, they're very different sounds.
So like if you imagine like Illmatic played by a live band, it'd be cool because it was Nas and it was a live band, but then you know, the drums on New York State of Mind, and then
The Roots pull it off, but they've got a million motherfuckers on stage.
And they get Questlove as well.
They got one guy that's just, you know, got a gyro on the one song. But or like a trombone player or some shit. But and we've also been able, we're starting with this tour, but we've just, in our conversations as we've been touring, we're just realizing like, oh yeah, we could do this, and the purity of just one MC, one DJ, is such a it's exciting to work with because it's connected to the tradition of hip hop, but there's also more things to be done there because there's not enough of that happening. There's not that many great MC DJ combos on the road right now, with a really dynamic set, like doing things where it's two people interacting and creating on stage in a specifically hip hop way. Some of the you know, remixes that we're doing on this tour, some of the ways Buddy's flipped beats or acapellas and stuff that I'm performing now. It's just really satisfying, and the show's been going off. The kids have been losing their shit.
Right. Is it as I was saying before we started recording, I'm pretty sure it was 2010 we saw you in Limerick, me and Paddy. You were supporting Pip.
Yeah.
It's possible then that you were just, it was just you and a CD.
Yeah.
So that's,
which is the, I mean, you know, that was when I was getting paid the least I've ever been paid.
That was your second album had just come out then.
And so I was just an opener at that point. So, you know, and for an opener, your best bet is to be one person. Is a one man show, fits in one seat in a van. And can rock a crowd that way.
Right.
So I learned to do that. And that was something very much that I got from Sage Francis, too. He's the dude that, he does that. He's on a tour right now doing that.
Still?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And he can, you know, he can deliver what the headliner needs to deliver. He can, the highs, the lows, the energy, the sad parts, the emotional parts, the part where you hug and kiss your girl, the part like all that shit with just him and a mic, and behind him is a laptop that you never even see or care about or give a shit about. And, you know, he taught me to do that, too. He was like, you need to be able to do that. And he brought me out on tours where he was like, nah, I'm not bringing a fucking DJ for you. Just plug your shit in and fucking rock the crowd. You know?
So what's it like then? Because, like, you know, if you're doing a set with a live band, you know, you've got your guys behind you.
Yeah, I don't have to do as
support,
much.
You know, and
I can just chill. I can just nod my head while someone takes a guitar solo.
Yeah, it's true. You got to work hard.
Although there's a bit like it's nice with you too, because you just fucking shred on the turntables at some parts of the show, and I just get to like be like, buddy, peace, everybody.
Like, I don't talk, so like you're doing all the vocal heavy lifting, and then I'm just kind of like making a few faces and scratching. But like, you still got to do all the talking.
Yeah, it's all right though. I'm good at talking.
Yes,
yeah, that's your job. Yeah. who am I talking to?
So when you on that tour, 2010 or maybe 2011 as well or whatever, you were with, it was down the second Scooby's Pippin, pretty sure.
Yeah,
it was it.
So you were doing your thing with CD and well, I'm sure you got a lot of fans doing that.
Yeah,
I remember we bought the CD and everything, and we were like. Yeah.
Big fan since then. We've never heard of you at this stage. Yeah. You know?
No offense, we hadn't heard of you.
Yeah. No, that's why I'm there.
Yeah, of course. I know. Yeah.
Most of my fans, that's why they're my fans now.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah.
I never had any big marketing budget or push from any major label or, but you know, like, I'd wager that 80% of my fans are fans because they came to see somebody else, saw me, bought my CD. And,
And you've been able to put on a good enough show before them. You know, I've heard other headline acts saying before, you got to pick a support act cleverly enough that they don't blow you out of the water before.
I think that I've been lucky to never be a victim in that role. I think that Sage, Dan and Pip, Atmosphere, Buck 65, the people that have brought me on tour, I've heard of other artists coming to the opener and being like, yo man, can you chill out a little bit? Like you got, like you're kind of fucking kidding. Like I've heard that happened to Sage once. I heard that.
Oh really?
But I've never ever experienced anything like that. And in fact, it's just been the opposite. Everyone has always just encouraged me to fucking kill it. Everyone has always treated me like they were a fan of mine and has gone to bat for me. And because I've learned from that too, that's the way it should be. Because I was saying this to Buddy the other night, when the opener kills it, the headliner makes more money. Because when the openers are all dope and then the headliner is dope, people feel like I've had an incredible gig.
Yeah.
Not just like I saw some shitty band and then the band I wanted to see.
Yeah.
It gives them like a more kind of glow about the show.
Yeah.
And they head to the merch table like, I want a souvenir of this night.
Yeah. And also
everybody does better when the opener kills it.
Yeah. And also if the opener is someone that you're not, is really boring or not that good, and you're sitting watching it for, you know, it's 50 minutes set up and then half an hour and then 50 minutes for the next band or whatever. And you lose energy. You're bored, and and then by the time the headline comes out, it's like, oh, okay, let's get started now.
Yeah,
but it's harder to get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if the support rocks it, they're like, oh, this is deadly.
Yeah, and, you know. And it feels great. And as a headliner, it feels great coming out to a crowd that is already cracked open.
And that was,
you know, so I just learned to do that job. I learned to walk into a room where kids were still kind of like standing around awkwardly and not drunk yet.
Yeah.
And the lights were still on because the fucking dickhead house light guy is not going to give me any of the cool lights. He's saving them all for the headliner. And possibly he's got my volume 2 decibels lower. And like I learned to tell him to turn the shit up, fucking tell him to turn the lights down. And, you know, have a fucking dance battle. You know, like, whatever. Like, your job is to break the ice, to loosen the crowd, to make them put their hands in the air for the first time for the night. Even they're not going to go as crazy for you as the song that they know when they came to hear.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can do... There's a job. There's a different job there.
Yeah.
And it's an easier job.
That's what I
was going to say. Is it hard to learn how to do that? Or, you know what I mean? Or do you have to kind of...
Yeah, I mean...
Did you get into it pretty easily?
Yeah, I guess I was kind of good at it when I started, and I got better at it over the years.
Yeah.
I figured out more tricks, more things.
I was just going to say, like, that's quite a thoughtful approach, because I guess if you're the opening act, you're probably going to be like focusing on your performance and like how you're doing and stuff. But like to think of it in terms of how the main act, like how the crowd are going to be with them after you, that's quite a sort of... That's a really interesting sort of way of seeing it. Like, because I can just imagine if you're the opener, then you'd just be like, I've got to be good, I've got to be good, I've got to be good.
Yeah.
But to be good for the main act, like, that's not really an obvious thought to have, I think. Like,
A lot of artists' ego get in the way.
Yeah.
And, like, it prevents them from understanding the role they're playing. Same thing with songs. It's like, if to make a good song together, you can't be totally focused on your part. You have to also be focused on like what you're doing in service of the larger thing that's happening.
Just talking about opening for different bands and stuff like that. You've opened for hardcore bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's not something that your regular hip hop act is known for.
Yeah.
How did you get into that, and how did you find playing for a completely different crowd altogether?
It was a really weird tour that I did. I don't know what year it was. It was a booking agent that I no longer mess with. And the whole tour was kind of a failed tour. I was like sleeping on people's floors, and I was showing up and like people weren't, they didn't have the money. And it was in Europe. and it was very strange. And I was by myself on trains. And I got the one cool show on that tour was when I got to Leipzig, Germany. And like I'm rolling my roller bag down cobblestone streets into like following the directions that I've been given. And I come into this squat, this weird like warehouse district where people are just passed out in the grass and there's graffiti of like murdered cops on the wall. and like I reach there and this guy just stumbles out and finds me and I'm playing this punk festival. I realize at that point that I'm the only American on the bill, the only hip hop on the bill, and that it's just this weird squatter crust punk festival that's about to happen. And he's telling me, he's like, oh, it's like 2 p.m. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, it was a late night. Everyone got to bed around 10 a.m. And slowly, so I slept on this weird rusty hammock that they had. And rusty hammock? Yeah, it was weird. It was crazy. It was actually like a swing set like you'd see at a playground, the metal thing. But they had taken that and they had attached the steel frame from a couch and hung it so that it swung. It was like a love seat. Like the whole place was like full of like weird, it was like Fraggle Rock, like it was fucking like they had made all this steel steampunk shit.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
All in this doozers.
Yeah, in this abandoned warehouse where they were all living, and you know, and so they all woke up around like 6 p.m. and started like fucking chopping vegetables on an assembly line, like making dinner for everyone. And then they were telling me about how they were going
commune to cult or something.
Yeah, it was a commune. It was an anarchist fucking commune. I later realized like the city of Leipzig apparently lets them all live there and have that spot so they know where they are. They're just like, you can make as much noise as you want. Just please just stay in this one area.
Spit out.
So then they're telling me like that there was going to be a protest. Like a lot of them were leaving to go to this Nazi house. Like a couple Nazis had bought a house in Leipzig and we're letting other Nazis live there. And some people had gotten beaten up in the neighborhood and all these punks were going to go like confront these Nazis. And then they were going to come back to the show. And I was like, is there a chance that that will get violent? And the dude was like, I think the plan is for it to get violent.
Oh, it will get violent.
So fucking 10 p.m. rolls around. All of a sudden, like, not less than 1,000 fucking people descend on this fucking thing. And these cats are just rolling in with, like, in packs of 12 with, like, stray Irish wolfhounds. Like, just roving nomadic punks from all over Germany just appear and just fill this place. And yeah, I get on stage, I'm just me and a CD player, and I'm doing songs from Fallen House and like Which Side Are You On and Film the Police Was Out. Man, they went fucking nuts. They loved that shit. And that was like one of the most fun gigs I ever played. So when I came back, I met Kathleen from Circle Takes the Square at a Sage show, and they told me they were fans. And yeah, we just had that idea, like, let's tour together. And again, I was the only rap act on the bill. I went into it like, well, maybe I'm going to get bottles thrown at me every night. But, you know, it was like a cool challenge. Let's see if we can do this. And Sage had done it before me, too. He toured with Against Me a few years ago. And so I was like, you know, why not? And, you know, maybe we'll win some fans. Maybe we'll get in front of some new people for sure.
Yeah.
And, man, every fucking night, the crowds were incredible.
How many nights you did?
Maybe it's like 16 dates. We did like from.
In that one place. You just played there.
Just that once. Yeah, once in the punk spot. But that was the thing that made me be like, I want to do this more.
Yeah.
And the Circle Takes the Square. It was with Circle Takes the Square and United Nations, which is another fucking great band. And yeah, they, you know, hardcore kids throwing their hands in the air.
They definitely go for it.
Like they didn't care.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a crossover too with Strange Famous and Sage and punk and hardcore. Right. Like those are a lot of the same kids.
Right.
Everywhere you go.
Yeah, yeah. I hope you enjoyed that. That was part one of the B Dolan episode. There will be another episode in a couple of days. So please come back and listen to that. I'm still here with Paddy.
How are you doing?
And Connor.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, Connor. And that was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was great fun.
So subscribe to us on iTunes and rate or comment if you can, because that stuff really helps. Also on SoundCloud, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And we're now on Instagram. So if you're on Instagram, follow us.
That's exciting.
Yep, it's good. B Dolan follows us. So
ooh, nice.
Yep. So that's good. Also, Headstuff Now has a t-shirt, which is very nice.
Very nice.
So go to headstuff.org and have a look at the t-shirt. And if you buy a t-shirt, we will love you and you'll be supporting us and what we're doing, and you'll be supporting Irish art, namely in Jacob Stack, who illustrated it. And it's very beautiful. It's nice and soft.
Just a picture of my face on it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a picture of Connor's face. So nice. Go and have a look at that, and maybe pick up a t-shirt for yourself for the upcoming winter months.
Oh yeah, the perfect time to release a short sleeve t-shirt.
Also, you can check out B Dolan on his website, bdolan.net, and you can buy his records there or at strangefamousrecords.com or on Speech Development, which is the UK version of which is Scroobius Pip's record company, basically, yeah. And they handle his UK dealings. And that's scroobiuspip.co.uk. You can also check out Buddy Peace at buddypeace.com. All those people are also on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. So my thanks to Paddy for joining me.
My pleasure.
And to Connor and Wilkins Sound Systems.
Pleasure as always.
Thanks to Video Blue for the theme tune. Thanks to Mikey for the artwork that he will do. Thanks to Matt as always. And we will be back in a couple of days with part 2 of the B Dolan episode.